This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
This episode of Herding Code is brought to you by JetBrains. JetBrains with Sharper is used by web developers a lot, and their forthcoming version 6 gets even better at that with extensive and ever-growing JavaScript and CSS support. They recently added a new extract style refactoring for CSS, and they'd love your feedback on that and other CSS features. Try fresh early builds of ReSharper 6 at jetbrains.net/ReSharper. Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. Tonight we're talking to Jin Yang. He's JZY on Twitter. His bio says he's a professional bacon eater and he does designery stuff at Stack Exchange to support bacon eating. And Nathan Bowers is at uxhero.com and he does user experience web design. He's done a lot of corporate as well as freelance work over the years. Did avc.com. And so this conversation tonight started on Twitter, I don't know, a week ago or something, where there was a blog post and it was saying, it was called Life Without Photoshop. Actually, it was on Quora. And it was talking about how at Quora, they don't do Photoshop first, like design, that they actually kind of from beginning to end are building out on a web application and you know, from beginning to end doing HTML and CSS. And I've had good experiences with that in the past and I've had bad experiences in the past where I was just given a bunch of images and told, you know, make your website look like this mock-up. And so I was all in favor of this. So then we kind of went back and forth. And so what is your reaction to that? Like when I say I don't like the Photoshop first approach, Nathan, you were saying that you think it works pretty well.
I think what you were trying to get at was you don't like being handed a Photoshop comp to slice up. And that's kind of what we talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you can start with HTML and CSS and kind of get a working prototype like in HTML and CSS, or you can mock everything up in Photoshop and then do that. And it kind of just depends on the project, really, what's more appropriate.
Right. That's what I think as well. I really have no problem against starting design HTML. Quora did it and 37signal did it too. In fact, a lot of the Stack Overflow, the new features, we don't do graphical mockup either. We just, you know, implement in CSS. So as Nathan said, it all depends on types of project. You know, if you're creating a simple interface, a web app type of website, then there's really no need. But well, my main thing against it was after that article, in fact, in the past, there were several articles, you know, promoting design HTML first, which I think all made sense for those companies, because if you look at their products, it really made sense. They did it that way. But what I was against is all these designers or developers saw is, oh, that sounds really cool. Me too, you know? And it's that me too attitude that I was against, because you really have to look at what your project is about. And if you have a paying a client, you really have to sell a design pitch, you know, to the client. You can't really code up the whole site and then show them and they say, oh, I totally don't like this. You know, if something doesn't work, then you really have to redo everything. So a graphical mockup in that case is really helpful.
Someone on Twitter said, well, a few weeks ago while we were talking about this, I forget who said it, but they pointed out that Photoshop is a production tool, not a design tool. And I agree with that for sure, because design for me happens on paper and in conversations, on whiteboards. And then you pretty much have a good idea about the design before you even start in HTML, CSS, or Photoshop.
Right.
Yeah. When I worked at Vertigo, their designers did some sketching just, you know, on paper. And it took a little bit of training the clients, because they're saying like, hey, we're going to this, you know, firm that does, you know, claims to be, you know, some top designers and you're giving us paper sketches. But once they're kind of trained to work with that, it worked really well, because they didn't fixate on things like, hey, I want this blue to be a lighter shade, or, you know, all those kinds of things. And you really did focus more on what kind of information you're trying to convey.
Right. That's the beauty of wireframing, because, you know, it's just totally objective. You know, it just, you know, so there's no color, just very simple lines and shapes. So people don't really focus on the eye candy part, you know.
So at what point do you transition then? Do you normally do For both of you guys, do you normally do like, you know, sketches, you agree with the client, and then you move on to art tool of choice, you know, design tool of choice? Is that Photoshop or is it Illustrator or?
For me, it's mostly Photoshop. I mean, I think Fireworks is pretty good too.
I'd say we circle back to the client. Like you were saying, some clients, you can't just show them a wireframe or show them a sketch, right? You have to have a certain type of relationship, and it depends on who the client is. So for example, in the case of Quora, when they talk about life without Photoshop, that's a startup and it's all internal. And, you know, you have developers and designers and all the business people working really closely. And so they're rapidly prototyping. So that's very appropriate. And on the other hand, if you have a very corporate client or just a client who isn't in that world, then a lot of times they're expecting very resolved, you know, high resolution Photoshop comps in order to kind of get what's happening.
So in that world where, you know, the designer and the developer is working closely together and, you know, they say they're designing in HTML, like, what does that really mean? Like, is the designer actually sitting and roughing out HTML and styling and everything? Or are they, you know, working more with the developer and the developer is implementing that?
I'm not sure how other companies do it, but in the past, once I have a website sketch on paper, you know, just really simple shapes, and I lay out the content, the copy, and then I would just simply convert that sketch to a more finished version in HTML or sometimes in Photoshop first.
So what I would do, and this was kind of in cases where I had a little bit of leeway, but we definitely, like, the client was very demanding in terms of it needed to look, they needed to be sold on the comp. We did do comps and iterated, you know, graphically, but then as early as possible, I would be looking at the comps and work with the designers and say, okay, this looks like we've got kind of a block on the left, we've got this. And so I would do a bunch of, you know, I would create HTML and chop up images and, you know, kind of say, like, this is what I think you're doing. And then as early as possible, try and get that so that we would get things on a stage server. And so instead of emailing the client, you know, PNGs, we'd be saying, you know, look at the stage server and, you know, hopefully, like, way at the beginning of the project, you're working in CSS. It depends if the designer and the developer are both comfortable with CSS. I think that's really the only way that works.
But before you even show the client anything, do you show them a rough concept of how the final product will look like?
Yeah, you know, in some cases I was able, you know, if we had some lead time and we were like, you know, after doing the, making the, like, we knew we were getting the project, we would start on that early. And so it was kind of half and half, like some areas of this page would just be a big image. But it was all divs, and so then later on we'd kind of convert that into text. But like, as I'm looking, like, Nathan, when you do a site like AVC, was that something where it is pretty textual? So is that something where, you know, I think some of this is, it's like you want to work in a tool that's not going to slow you down. And so when you're working in graphically, I can understand how something like Photoshop, Illustrator, Fireworks is quicker to do those sorts of things. You can move things around visually, but working with text in any of those graphical tools has always been really frustrating for me. And so I wonder, you know, like you guys were both saying it depends on the type of site but I wonder if with some, you know, like, where is that trade-off where it is mostly text and it's easier to just work in a textual format early?
When there's a lot of text like that, it's usually easier to work in CSS and HTML because you create CSS rules. So then you can just pour whatever text in there and then work with it that way. It's a lot easier to work with text inside of a browser, you know, instead and not in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
Photoshop is really, it's not really a layout program. It's for, you know, retouching, and it's got a lot of baggage that's not about laying out pages, right? So in a lot of cases, like, Photoshop itself is, like, just ill-suited for laying out layouts.
And yeah, I know it's ridiculous. You pay $1,000 for Photoshop and you really only use like 10% of it. Right. I mean, I'm looking at abc.com, Fred Wilson's site, Nathan did. If I were going to do the site, I would start in HTML too. I mean, if you look at it, it's there's no extravagant graphical element. You know, everything's very simple and clean, and that's totally doable, just starting HTML.
It's all about the style. Like when Quora talks about life without Photoshop, Quora, it's very appropriate for Quora's site. And looking at some Stack Exchange sites, some of them I would do in Photoshop and others I would do in CSS just because they have different sort of textures and looks.
Yeah. So, Jin, we were talking about this the other day. When you're working at Stack Exchange, you've got kind of an interesting problem because you've got like a defined, you know, all the sites are presenting very similar information, but they look very differently. And you were saying that some of that you kind of have to sell, your client is the community for these, right?
Yes. I think we have 45 sites right now, and 19 or 20 of them have been officially launched, and I designed the final theme for them.
So how does that, I mean, in terms of selling to them, can you sell things, like do you work in Photoshop?
Yeah, for those sites, I always work in Photoshop, and for new Stack Overflow features, you know, the core team start the new features in HTML and CSS right away. So Stack Overflow, between Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange sites, we have a combination of starting in HTML and starting in Photoshop. What I do now is I do all the Stack Exchange sites in Photoshop first, because I'm not really designing a new site from ground up, because all the Stack Exchange sites use Stack Overflow's HTML, so that part does not change. So I'm really just creating a like a CSS skin over Stack Overflow. So our users are basically our clients, and I have to create a theme that's really appropriate for that particular site. So before we launch the site, I really have to let them know how their site is going to look like, you know, and then they can provide some feedback. So that's something I cannot just plug in HTML and boom, launch the site.
Right.
That's why in my case, it doesn't work that way. And also for a lot of sites, it's a lot more graphical heavy than Stack Overflow, because I think Stack Overflow is our most minimalist site compared to the others. So my typical design process is I would think of a visual scheme that's really appropriate for that site, and then do some research, because some subjects are pretty easy for me, for example, cooking and gaming, and while other topics are just way over my head, like theoretical computer science and mathematics. I mean, like advanced mathematics. So, and there are so many of them out there, and there's still a lot more down the road. I have no idea how I'm going to design them.
Yeah, how do you even begin on something like that when you're doing a design for theoretical physics or something? You know, like what?
A lot of research. There are, for some sites, there have been times where I literally just sat in front of the computer the whole day researching on the topic without even touching Photoshop or any code. For example, the tech site, TEX, you know, and I never even heard of the term before. Well, I heard of it. I just knew it was about generating math equations, you know. And then as I read more about it, it was actually about advanced typesetting. And there were so many fascinating things I picked up along the way. And also the community feedback was really great, because for sites I knew a lot about, I would just go ahead to design first and then post the mockups on the meta site. But for sites I really know nothing about, I would make a post first, say, hey, what is your site about? You know, give me some hints. You know, then people would post their design suggestions and I would base my design on their postings. But even for sites that I do know well, for example, gaming, that took me a while to decide how it should look like. We end up using a 8-bit retro scheme, just because gaming these days is so broad, you know, there's like all sorts of games. It's hard to come up with one design that covers all of them. If you look at popular gaming websites, you know, on their banner, they have all sorts of graphics there. To me, it looks really busy. And I just think everybody has a place for nostalgia. So I thought a retro theme worked really well.
Nathan, what's your approach for that kind of thing? Like, for instance, I thought your post on the redesign of AVC.com, you know, where you were talking, I guess there are two separate challenges. One is, you know, initial design starting with nothing, and then two is a redesign. And I'm kind of thinking what Jin's doing is a mix of both, because it's reskinning existing information, but it's, you know, contextualizing it. I don't know, how do you approach those when you're both a completely new topic and then something like a redesign?
there's kind of a difference between content sites and web software. So when you're designing software with a lot of interactions, there's a lot of sketching, a lot of paper prototyping, and then you can maybe take it into, you know, like a wireframing software. But for the most part, just a lot of drawing of the interactions. And then once you have that, I would jump into a quick HTML, CSS, JavaScript prototype and work with a coder to make it kind of live and get the interactions going. Because I think with software, like, it's better to have a working prototype as fast as possible. And then for a content site, I mean, it always depends. It depends on the designer, depends on the developer, depends on all sorts of stuff. It depends on if you're designing for a CMS, like, what does the CMS kind of dictate? So really, you do what is appropriate, but I kind of am done with Adobe. Like, I don't know, like, a lot of people just don't like using it. I don't like using it. It seems like way too much tool for the task of designing websites, and it's really not even for designing websites. It's for, it's got so much print baggage, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it does seem like, you know, the polar extremes, you know, where you've got Photoshop on one side and you've got CSS, you know, HTML on the other side. And it seems like neither of those tools are necessarily the right tool for, you know, doing design.
Do you see there's
a big need for a tool in the middle there?
I sometimes fantasize about a browser-based web design tool where, you know, you dump in text or buttons or whatever, and it renders in a browser, and then you can move things around. I mean, essentially, like, you know, a lot of tools do this, like Apple iPhone SDK does that, where you can drop in controls and it just kind of works. I mean, I don't know, like, I don't have a lot of good experience with WYSIWYG drag and drop controls, but I fantasize about it working one day.
Yeah, it's most of them, when you look at the HTML, it's just horrible. Like, it's hard to, I haven't seen anyone do that in a way that is both easy to use and creates markup that's, you know, doesn't make you want to gouge your eyes out.
Right, that's why I made the point that web designers should know how to code. And I think that was one of the things I was talking to you about on Twitter, because the impression I got was you had designers who just gave you Photoshop files, and you are the one who had to cut them to HTML and style them in CSS.
Right. We should talk about John's post, the designer developer workflow crisis, because this kind of is what it gets down to, right? Is where are the handoffs in the workflow? What are the roles of the designer and the coder and the client and all that?
Yeah. In fact, I think I wrote a blog post
in response to that, right? Or
well, yeah. Well, I didn't mention this as a response to your post, but it was the same topic. So.
So to start, what I was saying was that it's just I see over and over the cycle of, you know, like, you've got two trains kind of crashing into each other. The designer is working on one thing. A lot of the time they're talking to the client, and then you've got the coder off doing his own thing, and he really doesn't like the design and he doesn't want to be bothered with it, but eventually he has to do it. And he doesn't know CSS a lot of the time and thinks he knows HTML, but often doesn't. And then, you know, so there's this like huge crash where you try and make the design look like the mock-up and it doesn't, and nobody's really happy, but you have to just say that's as good as it's going to get. And then, you know, that's bad enough. But then when you want to iterate, you know, then the client comes back, you know, for the next phase or later and says, you know, now we want to add on some new tabs and we want to add on this registration application and this kind of stuff. Then you do it all over again. Like, there's no way to do a quick change with that process. You know, like, I picture this, Jen, as if you were trying to do Stack Overflow with that kind of cycle, it would be like, there are ways that could go horribly wrong. Excuse me, Stack Exchange. But, you know, and
are you talking about how I present the design to the...
Well, I'm just saying, if you worked too long in that medium and if you weren't working at a level where you understood the underlying information, that it could be like a nightmare. Whereas I think what you're doing is you're very in tune with the underlying information and how it's going to be actually implemented at the end. And so you're not doing crazy things where, like, you know, the text is sideways and you know what I'm saying? Like, things that look nice in a design environment, but aren't going to work with the actual underlying information. So that's kind of, I guess, how I would summarize what I was saying. So your post was titled Web Designers and Coding.
Right. And I have a picture of that horse. I mean, because this topic has come up so many times within the web designer community. It's not new. And Actually, I got a lot of comments on this post. If you read some of the comments, I mean, most people agreed with me, but then there were a few that said, hey, I'm a web designer, and I have a partner who does front-end stuff. He's so good at HTML, CSS, JavaScript, you know, why bother, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think in his case, maybe he has a good setup, which is okay. But even then, my question is, why don't you learn HTML, CSS? It's not hard. It's not, I mean, when I say code, I just mean HTML, CSS. I'm not even talking about programming. I even think JavaScript is optional at that point, although it's really beneficial for a web designer to know JavaScript too. Because, there are a lot of big corporate environments where they hire a lot of people, really like specialists, you know, and even on the programming side, you probably have, the backend programmer, the DBAs, you know, and just all sorts of specialized programmers. And on the front end, you have a graphic designer, a usability person, like a front end developer, you know. But when you're in a smaller shop or if you're a freelance designer, it would be a lot better if you know all this yourself, you know, and you can get more business. You don't have to split the profit with anybody. And plus, when you convert your own design to HTML, CSS, you have a lot more control. You know exactly how to set, how much line height you have to set. You know, you can almost make it pixel perfect. Whereas if you depend on another person, depends on the skill level, the final result, the final website may not look the same as your static mockup.
Mm-hmm. You know, actually, that reminded me now of I think my tweet in response to that, life after Photoshop or whatever, where I said, you know, and I was fighting with 140 characters, but I was basically saying like designing a website in Photoshop is like designing creating a food menu, creating a recipe with Play-Doh, because it's like fundamentally the wrong.
I know that's what kind of, you know, hit a nerve in me. Because I'm not totally, I mean, as I said, I'm not against starting HTML at all. It's mm-hmm. just all depends on the nature of the site. And some sites, you know, in my experience, just doesn't work that way. You know, as Nathan said, if Quora were 37 signals, even our original Stack Overflow, we didn't have a client sitting there, somebody we had to meet in person, you know,
right.
Say, here's our, you know, we are just really designing whatever we felt was right and then put it out there. In fact, the Stack Overflow site is still doing that. We're constantly adding new features every day, and we just deploy that. If it turned out to be really bad, we'll be sure to hear that on Meta. You know, people are vocal there.
So, you know, that actually brings up a really interesting point, which is that a lot of clients are bad user or bad designers. And so, like, this reminded me of two comics. There's an XKCD one where it was, you know, what I want out of a college website and what it actually has. And it has a Venn diagram.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then there's another one. There's the restaurant website. And it's, you know, pretty ridiculous, where this is from the oatmeal. And,
right.
You know, he's got a picture, the flash and the annoying idiocy that you always see on restaurant websites. And I actually have boycotted restaurants because I hated their websites so much. And then what you really want is just like, you know, menu, location, you know, like hours, like that's all you care about.
I think the result of that is probably, you can normally tell the end result of a website has a lot to do with either the client or how the designer handled it. And years ago, when I used to look at really bad websites, I would just automatically think, oh, their designer sucked, you know. But after a few years, until 2000, and I realized, you know, sometimes maybe it's just the designer didn't know how to handle the client relationship, because a lot of times it almost seems like the designer says, oh, client's paying me whatever they say, I'll just do whatever they want, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they do that, I mean, they're no longer a designer anymore. They're just an extension of his software.
Yeah.
It's like the client is operating Photoshop through this designer, you know. Because to me, if you're good enough to get paid to do design work, you really need to give your professional input. You know, it's not always about pleasing the client. In fact, the client is not even the user sometimes, right? If you make a website for the client, they don't necessarily use a website. It's really for their users. You know, you have to think about what's best for those users.
Well, that's a huge point. Like like something like a restaurant website is often, you know, it's paid for by, you know, the owner of the restaurant, and it's kind of like an expression of themselves, and they're, but exactly, they're never using it. They don't, you know, like all the information they're telling is not what anyone wants to hear. So I think that like in cases where I've seen this work well is where you have like a, you start with like a sales person or is able to sell the fact that the client is paying you not just to make the site look pretty, but to convey the right information and.
Right. So when I used to freelance in the mid late 90s, I remember one time I did this website. The Fiverr website was so much better than their previous one, their flyer. And then when I presented it to the client, and he just absolutely hated it. You know, even though I knew the website was a lot better, and he made me to design the website exactly like their flyer, which is just like it's like Comic Sans and you know, all sorts of good stuff on there. You know, just really ugly. And of course, I was like a college kid back then. It's like, okay, you're paying me, I'll just do whatever. And of course, and he absolutely loved the website. And that's one website I never told anybody about that I did. And it was never on my resume ever. So after that, you know, I just felt like, I almost felt like I did something really dirty. You know, it was not something I was proud of.
Right.
Yeah, I was rereading John's post on the designer-developer workflow crisis. And the key crisis point he talks about is the handoff, where the designer hands over a bunch of static stuff, and then it's up to the developer, the programmer, to make it all dance, right? And we're, you know, we've been talking about Photoshop versus HTML, CSS. I think what we should talk about is the deliverable. So what does the designer give to the programmer? What's the appropriate deliverable within the team, and what are the roles on the team? Like, this is hurting code, right? So you're John Galloway, you're coding, you're like the lead coder or whatever. You're making all these, you're making it happen, right? So in what is it that you would want to see from the designer? What is the deliverable that you want?
We tried to get out of as early as possible the images going back and forth. So ideally the designer and I would both be working in CSS, they'd be passing me images, and you know, we go back and forth and say, hey, you didn't leave me, you know, I need a div here at the top, or I need a space where I can put this. You didn't give me an element for that. Oops, sorry about that. You know, so I think the key thing was a lot of communication. And then both of us were you know, checking code in and out and making changes to CSS and saying, hey, I updated the header, you know, I put in some hacky stuff, and then the designer goes in and says, your HTML sucks, I fixed it.
Jin and I kind of went back and forth the other day on Twitter about how rare it is to find a web designer that knows everything they really need to know. So, you know, they know Photoshop and they know HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, but they also know how to work with the view part of Model View Controller, and knowing how to use how to be on a team where you're using source control and making commits. And I think that is pretty rare. But it's also, I'm a guy that does, you know, I kind of do everything, but, you know, I do all the design stuff up front. And then when it's time to implement, I hand over, you know, working HTML comps. But then once the coder gets a hold of it and starts making a working website out of it, I still am working on the site and working within, like I'm running the project locally and doing changes to templates and doing changes to CSS and making commits. So I'm my role in the project is throughout the entire project and not just the graphics handoff. And a lot of times developers are surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest like danger sign too, is when I see either designers or develop, like I've seen this fall down more from a developer point of view than designer point of view, where developers are like, they don't want to be bothered. They want to write code and they don't want, you know, they think they know all the HTML and CSS they're ever going to need to know. And like, so, I mean, In the best workflows where I've been doing this, I would spend a lot of time with designers and say, hey, you know, is this, you know, like trying to help out and trying to say, what can I do better here? And how can I, if you're going to work on this header, can I put in some text there? And then you go through and, you know, let me know what you need out of that. But I think that's the hugest thing, is if everyone's like working on the same code base as early as possible, it seems to go smooth. Scott, you had something?
Yeah, so that's what Nathan said there. There was something he said. Once I hand off a working HTML comp, then the developer starts making changes and making it into a working website or a working app, and then he has to iterate and run it locally. And that's usually the biggest hurdle to overcome that I've found in the whole designer developer kind of workflow, is that, you know, a lot of times it's not easy to get the app or the website working on other people's machines, depending on how complicated the website is. And it also kind of depends on what machine, of course, the designer is using. So I think that most of the situations I've been in, the designers have been on Macs, and I'm writing a .NET app. So when, you know, we're into virtual machine land, or we have to deploy it to a server where they can go look at it, and then they maybe attach to a file share and work on the HTML and CSS.
But if the deliverables are just simply HTML files, why would operating system make a difference? I mean, you would get HTML for a Mac. This as good as
HTML
for a PC.
Yeah, so maybe that's the biggest difference between writing interactive websites and just straight HTML.
In my experience, with something that worked really well was, well, first of all, I think we haven't mentioned this. I think during the design process, programmers should get involved too. I know the mentality is, you know, I'm a programmer, I code, you're a designer, you make pretty things. But really, when we talk about design, design is more than just about how things look. You know, although designers do a lot of graphical work, but design is also about, you know, how things flow on a website. You know, how everything works, you know, whether it makes sense to put this link here or whether this copy of text makes sense, you know. And I think programmers should get involved on that part as well, because our latest project that we launched was Stack Overflow Couriers 2.0, which launched really well. And I work with our New York developers on that. And during the whole process, I realized, you know, there were just designers like me during this whole process, except for it's like a Venn diagram between me and them. Like, I do the graphic part, they do the backend coding. But in between, the intersecting part is we all work together on the design, where it makes sense or not. So I guess my question for you is, where do you guys think designers should be in this design process? I mean, programmers should be in this design process. Do you ever question your designers' designs?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, okay, I don't mean stuff like, I don't like this color, change it. You know, I just absolutely hate purple. But that's just personal preference. I'm talking about whether things make sense or not. You have to think really objectively, you know, no personal preference allowed.
Well, I mean, design-wise, I think it's very important to have like a mutual respect, and I think it's a definitely asking for trouble when a developer who doesn't know design tries to get involved in the wrong way, but or doesn't have a respect, you know, just thinks it's to make the site look pretty. But I think that it is important to work as early as possible and just say like, hey, I'm not sure how we can pull that off. You know, you've got that thing, that kind of widget at the top, and that's fine. But if that's, you know, expands out over this many characters, how's it going to wrap, you know, like what, you know, and just ask some of those questions. So yeah, I think it's important as early as possible. In fact, I really like to get everyone in as many meetings as possible, even like, you know, junior people on the team, get them on calls with the client, just listening in, not talking. But I think everyone having as much context as to why design decisions were made, and also to know some of the intricacies and the, you know, things like, you know, the client said this, but they're not really firm on it. They said, yeah, you know, three or four columns here, you know, do this or that. So then when, by the time that filters down to that junior guy and he's going like, I can't make it work with three columns, I'm going to do this crazy hack. To know that, you know, okay, well, that's a soft requirement. That's, you know what I'm saying? So I think getting everyone involved as early as possible is huge.
Mostly to call people on BS, or when they start to dig their heels in for things that just don't matter. And maybe it's because I'm a developer and I have absolutely no style or taste. I can't actually tell why these things would matter, like exact font sizes and width between the letters and you know, it's helpful for the developers to be there, especially if the designers don't know HTML and CSS that well, because there's just a lot of stuff that sometimes gets dreamt up that isn't either possible or easy to do. And that's why I don't think I've ever worked with a designer that knows HTML and CSS.
It's just interesting when I talk to programmers and I hear about a lot of designers you're describing, you know, the ones who gave you a crazy t-shirt flyer looking mock-up, and that's just really hard to implement. But most of the designers I know, I would even argue they know CSS and HTML better than programmers, because that's their bread and butter. You know, they're really anal about things. They're always on top of the latest specs, you know. And there are other things I always wonder, whose job is it to do? For example, what about accessibility, file compliant? Do designers, should programmers know that aspect of coding well, or is it up to web designers? Because to me, there's a lot of overlapping. I think both parties should know that really well, and then you can, you know, maintain each other's code, at least front-end code.
So I come from a particular perspective, in part because I'm married to a very talented designer who doesn't do HTML, CSS.
Oh, why didn't you say that early? Then nothing wrong. A designer doesn't know that.
brings up a lot of issues for me, or a lot of points for me. One is, I feel like the word designer is applied very generically, and what some people think of as a designer is not what other people think of as a designer. So I think it's kind of a nebulous word.
I agree. Well, you're talking about web designer or just
yeah.
a graphic designer?
Web designer.
Yeah. Okay. So in my post, I strongly urge that a web designer is one that can do both graphical aspect and coding. Otherwise, you're just a graphic designer, right? I mean, to me, that's the difference.
See, I mean, I don't see it that way because I do think that designing for the web is a skill, and that designing for the web, I guess I don't see why being good at designing for the web means you also have to be good at doing HTML and CSS.
Because the web is
like independent skills.
The web is the medium then, because we're not putting a big JPEG on the page, right? We're, you know, the page has functionality, it has interactions, and you know that part resides in HTML and CSS, so and even JavaScript, and so that's why I think a web designer should know that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a graphic designer at all. I mean, I know plenty who can do really awesome graphic work, but I mean, think of this: if you are a one person or two-man startup company and you really need to hire a designer, wouldn't you want somebody who can also do CSS, HTML?
I think there's obviously like exceptions to every rule. And I think obviously, Kevin, your wife knows the limitations and has like there's different ways to know what's possible and what's going to work on the web. And one pretty much surefire way is to actually like do a good amount of CSS and HTML or enough to, you know, run into limitations and go, okay, this looks good on my machine, but it's not going to work on a smaller browser or whatever. But obviously there are other ways to accomplish that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to make it black and white really. I'm not saying, yeah, I mean, I feel really strongly about it, but I can certainly see cases where if you have a good setup, you know, let's say if you and your wife have a web company, she does design, you do the coding, then that's a really good setup. You know, there's really no point for her to know, right? But in my experience, a lot of places it doesn't really work that way. And even when they have the money to hire a designer front end, and that's where the discrepancy happens. You know, like what you're describing, designers hand you a mock-up that's not really implementable or just doesn't really work well when converted to a website.
Yeah, to me, though, that's not necessarily because they don't know HTML. That could just be because they're a crappy designer.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, with CSS 3 and even the old CSS 2, just about pretty much everything was implementable. I mean, yeah, you might have to hack it, but I think it was still possible.
And I also feel like as we move to, you know, richer and richer web applications, less and less of the sites are going to be implemented in HTML and CSS. I mean, it's going to be a lot more JavaScript. It's going to be a lot more dynamic. You have single page apps, you know, where essentially everything is, you know, HTML templates rendered over JSON data. Like that's much more of a development delivery than it is a design delivery. You know what I mean? So in that case, you know, is the designer delivering HTML and CSS really, you know, they're not really delivering the real artifacts that are going to end up being used.
But a lot of the HTML and CSS can still be recycled, right? I mean, your website is still made up by CSS and HTML. I mean, it doesn't matter how it's rendered, you know, the final result is still HTML and CSS. So that part's not really changing.
True, but you're not actually like, I guess my point is that you're not, you know, working on the same asset. You guys aren't collectively working on a single asset. You know what I mean? Like I'm coding up some stuff and you're, you know, doing some HTML and CSS and we're not necessarily working in the same world. Do you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right. Okay. Okay. Let's say we're you and I. I'm a designer. You're the programmer. We're starting this new web app from scratch. We already wireframed every single screen, right? We know exactly how everything should flow. And normally, what I would do is I go ahead start coding this design to HTML, CSS. And meanwhile, you work on the back end. You know, you work on these modules. you know, the database calls, whatever. And once I'm done, I give you the HTML, CSS. And maybe by then you will have already, you may have a really crude HTML, CSS, your version, you know, maybe not look pretty. And but you got the backend functionalities working, and I gave you the finished polished CSS and HTML. You simply plug my code into your template or vice versa, you know, and that's how I see it works, at least in my experience.
The one place that you mentioned, Kevin, that this is more difficult is the single page app, and I hate those things. I hope they go away, because I think that that is
an example. You don't use Google Reader?
No, I mean, there are very few that actually work. I sometimes use Google Reader. I like the Gmail, although really that's just paging. But all these new, like Twitter, Gawker, Lifehacker, all these single page.
Oh, those are ridiculous.
Well, and so I hope we don't go any further that way, because I think that the idea is people are designing to try and make something that looks great on an iPad and looks like an app or something. But they're just horrible. For me, I really dislike the interface. I don't know if anyone else cares, but they bug the heck out of me.
I guess to me, saying designers should always be able to code is kind of the flip side of saying developers should be able to design. Like, you never hear that.
I heard that comparison a lot, because I know it sounds like a really good analogy. You know, you're just flipping the nouns around, but it doesn't really make any sense, right? Because the whole point for a web designer to be able to code is because that's the web is the medium, and it, when you're coding, you're not really programming. You know, it would be true if I said designers should program, and so programs therefore should design. I'm just simply saying designers should be able to learn a markup language. You know, it's not programming.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think it's closer to programming than some people give it credit for. I mean, it's very fiddly. Yeah, it's very, you know, you have all these browser hacks. You have, you know.
Well, sure. I mean, the CSS part.
It's a form of programming, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, obviously, if you are a graphic artist, you start out, you know, doing art and pretty stuff. And then you had to learn how to use IDE to write code. Obviously, they didn't sign up for that. You know, I can see why some people hate that. That's why I think, you know, I think you were right when you said designer, the title is kind of murky these days. And I think it really is too, because I've talked to different people, you know, self-claimed web designers. Then when I ask, say, how do you do these browser hacks? You know, they say, oh, I don't really touch CSS, you know, and then some web designers I talk to, they don't even do graphic, you know, they're usability experts or user experience experts, you know, and it's just a very specialized field right now. And sometimes I don't even know what to call myself, really.
Well, I mean, Kevin, you did mention that, but I do think that designer or developers should care more and should learn more about design than they do, and not from a, like, they should have respect for it and not just be like, oh, I'll pick up design, how hard can it be? But I mean, I do think that it's one of those things where by trying to learn some things about, I mean, the minimal amount that I've tried to learn, I have more respect for what designers are trying to accomplish than otherwise, and can, you know, try and like, I think that also has really helped in a team to build up some mutual respect, where I could say like, hey, I really like what you're doing there. That reminds me of this, or, you know, be able to like have some kind of common understanding, you know, as far as what the
right.
designers.
Right. I think you definitely don't have to feel paranoid about critiquing a designer's work. My coworkers call me out all the time. You know, I would send them a mock-up or a concept, and they would say, why do you do it that way? And sometimes when I find myself, I cannot explain myself, that's when I know I probably failed. So, yeah, I think everybody should just, you know, the design part, everybody should be involved.
So that's a good lead into to my question here. How do you learn design? Because I've tried to go and look through books and at the library, trying to find something that'll teach me about, you know, not even web design in particular, just in general design. You know, how can I pick colors? How can I, you know, and I'm not just talking about the little color wheel thing where you pick the opposites and the complements or whatever, but, you know, just how do you learn about how the lines flow and how you want to lay things out and you know, where's are there any resources out there for like beginning, or do you just have to kind of already have a taste for it in a sense for, you know, the aesthetics and the design?
Nathan, you want to take that one?
Sure. I think if you wanted to, let's say you, Scott, wanted to design something and do it all on your own, and like you say you had like a little web app, right? I would say you should start with Like, what if you don't even worry about colors? Why don't you start with a lot of constraints and then work from there? So, for example, you could say, okay, my app is going to be black and white, and that's it. And then it's going to be all typography, no images, and I'm just going to use, like, the form elements in a browser. And I think that would be a good way to start, because you're not worried about all the pretty stuff. Instead, you're worried about how it looks, you're thinking about how it works, right? Like, you start with functionality, and then you do it all at once, right? It's like the functionality has to be worthwhile, and then you have to make it appealing to use. But you were kind of asking about learning typography and stuff like that.
That's kind of where developers always start. I mean, we just kind of end up with black text, white page, at least web developers, and then, you know,
well, one thing,
and all everything works in the back end. But then we're like, so how do we make this not ugly?
Well, there are a lot of resources. I can send you guys a list of blogs and, you know, color theories, websites.
Jin, I remember you sent me a list, by the way, at one point, and I picked up a few of them off Amazon, and they were really appreciated. But if you do send us a list, we'll definitely put those in the show notes. So
I probably would just repost what I told Scott Handsome that one time. I gave him a list too. But I think design is not easy for designers to do too. I mean, I think you see a lot of really pretty websites out there, you know, but pretty isn't always effective, especially I think designs are a little bit better these days, but just a few years ago, every page had, you know, a shiny button, Web 2.0 badges, you know, almost every page looked the same. And the people, I mean, a lot of designers, they copy what's popular out there and what's trendy. And to me, I just never liked that, because it's not appropriate. It's not always appropriate for the theme of the website, you know. So I think the right design is the one that can evoke this feeling that, for example, if you're on Stack Exchange Gaming, the first second you're there, you know right away this site's about gaming, you know, or this site's about home improvement. You really have to go with that feeling when what the best way is to achieve that.
I have a question for Scott. Back to learning design. What do you enjoy? Like, are there any, what tools do you like? Is there art that you like? Is there architecture you like? A lot of it is what speaks to you, and that's a good place to start, like, investigating what you think makes something good.
See, it's still hard, because, so I'm huge into comics and graphic novels and that, so I see different art styles all over the place. But when I try to sit down, I think, okay, so I've got this app, I've got it, you know, working, or I've got this, let's even just start with a blog skin. Let's say, so the functionality is already there, I already know the functionality that I like. But then how do I, you know, when I start to pick things and start to lay things out, it just kind of looks, you know, hokey to me. It doesn't look as polished. And maybe that's what I'm trying to get to. I'm trying to get to the point where, you know, I can throw colors, I can throw black and white, I can do whatever on the page, but I'm trying to, you know, come up with a way to make it look more polished and you know, have an understanding for why things work. I guess I'm thinking back to, like, my background is somewhat musical. I took a couple of years of music theory. So, you know, there's playing, and then there's understanding why certain notes work in certain context. And you can play without understanding the notes.
Yes.
But if you understand the notes, it makes it easier to compose.
That's a really good analogy. I mean, I think it's like, is there a difference between a coder and a programmer? And I guess in the designer world, there are toolers, Photoshoppers versus designers too. I think it's pretty easy to learn the how, right? There are a lot of tutorials out there. You can pick up a Photoshop tutorial and replicate the exact same thing within a couple hours. But to learn the why is very difficult. It takes years.
When it comes to design, the place to, like, the beginning of all knowledge is the grid and typography.
Yes.
Because if a lot of times, if there's just a really good underlying grid and proper, you know, proper typography and spacing and balance, there is no, like, decoration that needs to be done. It's just the design is already balanced and almost all ready to go. So if you want to learn, I would say look at grids and look at typography.
One thing that's helped me, I saw a talk at Mix09 by Robbie Ingebretson, and he's at Nerd Plus Art, and he had a talk that year called Design Fundamentals for Developers. And then he had one the following year, which was like something like 10 ways to attack a design problem and win. So, I mean, I think his whole thing, Nerd Plus Art, is nice, because it's kind of like a but his talk of the design fundamentals for developers talked about both those things you guys were just mentioning, and also was kind of just inspiring, like, look, you can do this, or you can at least get started, you know, and here's some like important principles you should start with. So
I think that's great. I mean, you don't have to, a coder can look at something and know, can and feel that it's out of balance, right? Or feel that the grid is bad, or even, you know, they could like, you could draw your own lines over it and see if the grid is bad. And if you go back to the designer and say, oh, well, this design is kind of, you know, I don't know how you broach it with it, how a coder broaches design to a designer and tells him his job, but you totally could. You know what I'm saying? Like, designers can be kind of touchy. But yeah, it's good when designers and coders can speak each other's language and have a lot of common ground.
How much of it do you think is just talent, just, you know, like an innate sense for this stuff? I know, like, when I, you know, when I watch my wife use Photoshop and like lay out something in 5 minutes, it's kind of like watching somebody paint a picture for me. Like, it looks so cool and I have no freaking clue how they're doing it. You know what I mean? And it seems like an innate talent.
It's funny. I blogged about this topic before. In fact, if you Google the word natural talent, guess who's number one on Google? But I think there's definitely natural talent, although I think some people wouldn't agree. I mean, obviously, it takes a lot of hard work and natural talent to get really, really good. But sometimes hard work alone can really get you pretty far, too.
I think you can have taste without being a designer. And I think that's an important distinction. So, for example, you know, if you, Kevin, you enjoy your iPhone, right? I had to work it in there. You enjoy your iPhone, right? And like, yep. Why do you enjoy it? Does it feel good in your hand? Does it look good? You know, when you look at things that you enjoy and the things that appeal to your sense of taste, that's a good place to start learning.
Sometimes it feels like the chasm between what I like and being able to make something like that just feels enormous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love
enormous for me.
But I don't know that I can play it.
Artists have this all the time. Like, you know, I do a lot of drawing, and you have something you see in your mind and you feel like you can't get it from your brain to your hand. And that just comes from practice and doing and doing and doing. So everyone experiences that. Designers experience that.
I think Nathan is very right. I think for programmers to have a good taste, or for a manager to have a good taste, is very important. Because you don't always have to be the one, you know, doing the groundwork, doing it in Photoshop or coming up with the design. But if you have a really good appreciation for design and art, you know, then you can really give really good critiques to the designer too.
Yeah, and I think too, like, if possible on a team, that's really cool if you can get that going. Like, we had in our team where we'd send out, hey, check this design out. This thing, real, like, I love the way that you can read this. Or, you know, this looks like a neat concept, but I just can't handle it. Like, it doesn't seem, it overpowers everything else. You know, and so, I mean, I think that's kind of a cool, like, I don't know, like, bringing people together on that within a team is nice.
You can go a level higher and say that the strategy, the all the business stuff, you know, that all is important too. I mean, that's driving everything, right? So if everyone can speak and kind of be on the same page regarding, okay, this is what we're trying to do, and then this is how we do it, and then this is how we make it look good or feel good. If everyone can kind of be in that conversation, that's really good, I think.
Right. What do you, Nathan, what do you think about the design process where the designer creates multiple mockups and then presents it to the designer or the stakeholders? Do you normally just create one design and then go with that?
There's what's awesome, and then there's what's for the budget. What fits the budget and the time frame, right? I remember reading a little while back that every time Apple does something, they do 10 mock-ups of it, and they iterate on those. I think that's probably a really good way to just be awesome. I don't know if you've ever read, there's a book called, what is it? I think, is it just called Mindfulness? I'll look it up. But anyways, it talks about how if you tell someone to have 5 ideas, those 5 ideas will probably be pretty shallow and pretty obvious. So if, for example, you say, okay, come up with 5 uses for a chair that are not for sitting, they'll come up with 5 kind of obvious, kind of lame uses, right? If you say come up with 50, you know, they're going to work through a lot of crap, but then, you know, later on, they'll start to have kind of interesting uses, and as they think about it, they'll discover. So what I'm getting at is it would be best if we had the budget and the time to just do a bunch of prototypes and a bunch of iterations. However, you know, we usually don't have that luxury. So it's important to, I guess, build that into the project budget.
An ideal thing, too, is if you have a flexible enough design and a flexible enough team where you can continue to make changes as things go on. So, like, ideally, you have a bunch of prototypes at the beginning and you work from those. But it's also nice to your application continues to be a prototype as you work. And if you can sell your client on the idea of reviewing your work regularly, then everybody wins because, you know, maybe something that the client thought was going to work, you know, you put it on the stage server and they say, it looked good, you know, it looked good in my head, it looked good on the paper, but I it's not very usable. So, and, you know, switching over from pictures to working with an actual application is a great way to see that.
Ah, that's agile sounding, John.
That's where it's key to have a developer that's in the code workflow and working deeply with, you know, source control and is comfortable running the site locally and being able to make agile changes like that. Otherwise, we get back to what John posted about a long time ago, which was, you know, the break when, okay, the designer hands over static and then you go through the design process and then there's changes and then you have to start all the way over again.
Yeah, I think I'd stress it more than just important. I think it's critical because I've been at some places where the designer would, you know, if I didn't implement something to her specs, say that there were too many pixels between the lines or something else, she would file bugs against me. And that meant that, you know, I had, you know, less time to work on functionality, less time to maybe fix more important bugs.
See, that's just weak sauce.
If she was able to just go in and change them, then...
Exactly. I mean, that's why I think it's, you know, it goes back to what I was saying, what designers should code, in my humble opinion.
Right. It goes back to who are you hiring? What kind of team are you building? What are the roles? Yeah. I mean, if you have a designer who just isn't part of the workflow, I mean, that's something you should really consider fixing.
My standards are so low. I just got excited because someone sent me actual hex codes for the colors in their design. I was excited about that. I didn't have to use the dropper and kind of hope that I didn't get a pixel that was anti-aliased or something.
Hate those anti-aliased pixels.
Yeah, you need to go on like a rampage or something and get that sorted out.
There were a few loose ends earlier I was wondering about. One was there was a discussion about, you know, sometimes when the designer's working Photoshop on a Mac and the developer's working, you know, whatever their development platform is and they're not the same. And Jen, do you work on a Mac when you're doing your design?
Yes.
So how does that work?
Well, we use Mercurial, and I use this Mac client called Murky. It's basically I can check in, check out a file using that. I mean, all I'm checking in is CSS files and graphic files. And I don't really make HTML changes. The core team does that. So it's pretty seamless. It works pretty well.
Does that automatically get deployed then, or... Okay, so you check into Mercurial, the build runs, and deploys it.
Mm-hmm. I check it in, it makes the build on development server, and then we make it official production build about once a day, and whatever changes, there are just tons of tons of changes going on every night.
I think that, so here's one loophole that I've found in that working on another environment, is that I use things like Firebug or... you know, throw rocks if you want, but the IE developer toolbar actually sometimes works for this, you know, or the Chrome, any of those in-browser toolbars do get around the thing where you don't need necessarily to have the working app running locally, you know, to go in and just say like, well, what if that was 10 pixels? Now, how about 12?
Sure. I cannot live without Firebug. You know, Firebug is the same on Mac and PC. And a lot of times when I fix bugs or do a new styling, I would do that in Firebug first, and then I would paste the code back in my CSS.
So from that workflow, then you look at what's on the server, you tweak the CSS in Firebug, you get it actually, you know, you get what you think is right, you push the CSS, the build runs, you see it on the dev server, and then everything's hopefully right. If not, you fix it. Otherwise, it goes out as part of the daily build.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I probably have fixed hundreds of CSS bugs in the past 6 months. And, you know, our meta is pretty much our bug tracking. If something goes wrong, the user will post it, and then I would fix it.
The one thing that I wish worked better, and maybe I just haven't seen it when I was using Firebug more, was that I wish that I could go through and make a bunch of changes and then it would track everything that I did and give me like a updated CSS file of like, okay, here's,
there's an extension that does that.
Okay. I get it.
You can use the other plugins, the web developer toolbar. You can, and then you can actually make CSS changes and save that CSS to your local. But I think the only thing is bad about that is it only renders the dash mods prefix, right? I think the CSS had your, dash webkit. I'm not sure if that renders.
There was another question earlier. We were talking about the, kind of the different styles of websites, web applications, and what flows work for them. So there's, on the one end, there's content, which is very, it's textual. And so that seems to work pretty well in HTML. And then there's the web application, which I think what you were saying earlier, Nathan, a lot of the time that's something where you actually have to see it in action. And so that, to me, goes back to it's got to be coded in HTML. So what are the sites that need, there's the skinning case, which you're doing, Jen, where you've got, like, you need to do graphic design on top of an existing, like, it's the CSS Zen Garden thing that you're doing.
Yes.
What are some other types of sites where it's just like you'd be crazy not to do a visual design for? Do you know what I mean?
I think if you, for example, if you decide it provides a rich experience, like gaming promotions or movies, you don't care about if the user comes back for the 10th time or 100th time. You just want their initial experience just like what really wowed them. So sites like that, like those, they tend to be a lot more graphic intensive, a lot more flashy. Whereas you wouldn't want Wikipedia to look like that, right? Because, you visit all the time. You want it load as fast as possible, as clean as possible. And that's why Stack Overflow is really Spartan looking. And I remember reading some designers critique, somebody blog about Stack Overflow, just totally dogged Stack Overflow, saying how ugly it is, and bad UI or bad usability. Because I knew he was just talking about the skin, the visual part. It had nothing to do with UI.
Cool. How about for you, Nathan? Is there anything where you would like, I do just a complete, as opposed to even wireframe, but you're looking more at a, complete visual experience feel first?
Right. So if you're deciding whether to, when to use Photoshop and when to design an HTML CSS, something we haven't discussed is that HTML and CSS is not super great for doing a solid grid layout. So a lot of times that's why people use Photoshop first, because you set up your guides and your grid lines and all that, and everything snaps to grid, right? And when you're working directly in HTML, CSS, none of that exists. You have to code all that to make it happen. So a lot of times if I'm experimenting with a layout, I will start in like Fireworks or Photoshop. And then once I kind of have a sense of the layout, it'll be a rough layout. It won't be like a fully resolved layout. Then I'll go and know, now that I know what my grid is going to be like, I will then code it.
What do you think about this grid framework, like 960? There's several other ones out there too.
I've used a couple of them. I always do it by hand. I just always do it by hand. I can't get into those.
Oh, another point is, like, speaking of the grid system, I was going to say there are actually a lot of good design resources today than years ago. It's really good, beneficial for programmers too. For example, if you're a programmer, you don't know how to design, you don't want to, but you want to have a nice looking blog, and there are a lot of good pre-existing themes, like CMS themes out there. And, there are a lot of predefined HTML templates and CSS templates out there, too.
Yeah, I think, specifically on those grid systems, it's true that, like you guys were saying, a good grid can help you have a decent looking design. But those grids always bug me just from the whole, like, nerdy semantic side, because you're scattering all these classes that have nothing to do. Like, to me, the way I approach HTML is, like, those classes mean something. and if they do mean something, that kind of, and this goes back to the whole, like, if you really are doing the HTML first design and letting that drive things, then, you've got, your content is driving the design rather than like visual. So like you look at something like Quora or Stack Overflow or whatever, and it's the information on the page drove the design rather than the opposite.
Sure. I agree. The content is definitely the king. That's what keeps people coming back. Therefore, a good design is probably one that's not really being noticed. That's why some of the stuff I did, I know sometimes this design I did is really graphical, but if you look at the content section of the sites, you know, on Stack Exchange, it's still very clean because that's the part that matters.
Cool. Are there any other major things you guys want to talk about?
I'm good. Okay. I think we've covered quite a lot.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything else to add.
Great. Okay.
I was going to point out that a lot of the new elements in HTML5, which IE9 doesn't support. are centered around solving that semantic grid kind of divergence, so that you can still lay out things. You can have header and nav elements and things like that, but they're actually called those things instead of div class equals, you know, some crazy grid. And the flexbox model, which isn't quite in the recommendation stage yet, but is looking to be an interesting solution for grid layouts on the web. Interesting and as the name might imply, flexible.
Well, for those HTML5 elements, you can just include that. You know, there are several JavaScript libraries out there that you know will make IE render. They're simply just basically injecting those elements as a DOM object, right? Then you start like a display block, and that's how a lot of sites are using HTML right now. In fact, it's even compatible with IE5, I believe.
The JavaScript shims are out there and they'll work, but the reason that the semantic elements are so important is more for mobile devices than for standard kind of web browsers on the PCs. Because if you put an input type date time on an iOS device or an Android device, it will actually use the native date pair.
The keyboard, right?
Yeah, rather than forcing you to type in a key or type in a date or anything like that. So it'll actually bring up a native UI, or has the opportunity to. I don't know if Windows Phone 7 will do that or not when they update IE Mobile.
And mobile is a big point. I'm going on back in the chat as well. I think all of us would like to talk about mobile, but we're at a too long now. So definitely would be interesting to talk again and go into some of the mobile design aspects and also like how that flows, how you design something that translates, you know, how you split up what you do on a desktop design and mobile design and all that.
Yeah, we can talk about next month at Mix.
Awesome.
I'll see you guys in person.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be cool. And maybe you can get a plus one and bring Nathan with you.
Yes, that'd be cool. I've been telling him to go.
Dude, I'll go.
Will you?
Did you say that I could stay with you, Jin? Was that how it worked?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, it's more than merrier.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, I would come and party, totally.
Well, it's Las Vegas. I don't know if you'll find a party there.
I don't know. Yeah, it might be hard to find a party there.
Right.
I should fly to LA first, and then you and I drive to Vegas. You know, we can recreate a scene from Swingers. I'd be like, Vegas, baby, Vegas.
It could work.
I'll take you to tacos.
And then recreate the Hangover.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to play that Chinese guy. He's kind of crazy.
Cool. Well, all right. Before we wrap up, is there anything you guys want to plug?
I think I plug enough about Stack Exchange.
Yeah.
But, you know, honestly, it's like I've been really enjoying doing the stuff I've been doing. It's probably the most challenging job I've ever had.
Well, it's about time somebody started talking about Stack Exchange because, God, you never hear about it, and it's so underrated.
You're like designing a whole new site once a week or something, right?
Yeah, you were saying this when we talked earlier when you were checking your mic, Jen, but it's like CSS Zen Garden for real. Like,
it's like an extreme addition. I mean, the challenging part is actually not the CSS. That's just tedious. I mean, that's just technical. I think the challenging part is actually coming up with a design that's really appropriate for the site. It's not just pretty. It has to evoke that emotion within the users, right? I mean, for example, math people, they don't like something fancy. They like something really clean, academic. And this whole exercise, it kind of, I think it taught me a lot more about different users and almost a little bit about psychology too, you know? And then I learned a lot of new things about different topics, because for every site I had to research, it almost feels like doing a research paper.
Cool.
Let me just say one more thing. That to me is like, is the interesting part of web design. You know, we talk about, you know, should a web designer give you HTML or CSS. To me, what makes a designer like really worth it is being able to synthesize that emotional reaction and
yes, I think that's really
like, that's the value to me, not spitting out HTML.
That's the hardest part too, I think, because when you design site, it's before you even get to Photoshop or even think about CSS, you have to know what you're gonna have. You know, you have to create this imagery that will evoke people will get an emotional response from it. And I think that's because that's really important. If you are a product, if you're selling a product, if you can somehow work that in, then you sell more products, right? And obviously different sites have different goals.
A big part of that emotional connection or reaction comes from solving the right problems. So if on some level, like it can be beautiful, but if it doesn't solve the right problem, then it does no one any good. People get really emotional when something works really well.
Sure, it's a combination of how whether it looks or and how it works too. I mean, in fact, I would think how it works is probably even more important.
Right, you got to have both.
Cool. That's probably a good note to wrap up on, lest we spin the whole discussion right back up again.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks a bunch. And thank you, Nathan.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks.
Cool. All right, that's all the time we have this week. We'll catch you next time on Herding Code.